Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here with Dan Natterman, Dov Davidoff, Todd Barry's coming. Maybe we might even see Aruba Ray. We have good news.
We can only hope.
Sirius Radio has extended our contract for another year. So although we get no information about our ratings or about our listenership or anything like that, we have to believe that since this will be our third year on Sirius Radio, that somebody must be listening or they have some ulterior motive for keeping us on. But either way, we're happy to stay on the radio. So, Dan, congratulations, Dan.
Congratulations, guys.
Well, I should warn you, I'm feeling a little prickly today.
Why are you prickly, Dan?
For a variety of reasons. First of all, I start off at level five prickly, even on a good day.
On a scale of one to ten?
On a scale of 1 to 10. So it doesn't take much to get me into the red zone of prickle.
Yep. Well, it's tough out there.
For various reasons. It'll probably come out in the course of the show. You're going to Moscow.
Why are you feeling prickly, Dan?
We'll find out why, right
after these words.
Yeah. I feel
the people
that
are on the edge of their seats. Explain.
I feel that this show for you is such a low priority. That's
why you're prickly?
That's why I'm prickly.
Does it have nothing to do with the holiday season?
Listen, the holiday season might factor
I will tell you honestly, I have been nonstop for the last 7 days trying to comply with the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. It is burying me in stress and bureaucracy. And as we had a meeting today with the staff about it.
So far as you're trying to determine how much to put in, what...
Don't even know whether we need to comply with it whether it's cheaper to pay the penalty.
What is involved in complying with it?
You have to figure out how many employees you have, how many full-time equivalents, how many exemptions. Then you have to figure out what the plan costs, how many people are going to sign up for the plan. Is it cheaper to offer the plan than to pay the penalty?
Right.
And then if you offer the plan, how do waitresses pay for the plan? Well, you have to withhold their credit card tips. It's a bottomless pit. And as recently as 5 minutes before the meeting today, after 5 years, I get a call from the guy who's supposed to be advising me on this and drops the law is this. Totally pulled the rug out from under me. It is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, everything in politics is about doing things that other people have to fucking comply with. I sound like Rush Limbaugh, right? Congress actually exempted themselves from this law.
Congress actually exempted them.
It is a nightmare. So I have a meeting with my staff today, the 40 people at the meeting, and I'm telling them all the nightmare. I'm saying, you know what? In the infinite wisdom of the federal government, we are a large company.
Amazing,
a bunch of waitresses and busboys. We are like IBM or McDonald's.
Yeah.
And we have to comply with this ridiculous law. Yeah. And then, do you know what is all, the plan after all said and done? Do you know the plan that the government allows me to offer? Well, I could offer a more expensive one.
Yeah, if people make a lot more money.
It's the bronze plan. Do you know what the bronze plan is?
I have no idea.
It's zero coverage. $6,000 deductible.
Wow.
They have to pay $220 a month.
Something catastrophic would have to happen in order for the insurance to kick in.
But what they get is a free checkup.
Wow.
And that is it. And they have a $6,000 deductible.
Wow.
They're never going to use it. And in return for that, the whole place is turned. Come sit down, Todd. I'm ranting about the Affordable Care Act.
Affordable Care Act.
Look,
and you're missing it, Todd.
And Dan is fucking bitching that the radio show is not my priority. You don't know what it's like. You got nothing to do. Your business is to sit home and think of things. That'll be funny.
All I know is...
I have a real life. I have two kids. I got a wife who hates me.
Two kids,
I have
a wife.
I understand all that.
Bureaucracy.
I understand all that. And yet, you have time to go to Moscow for an entire week next week.
He's got to get away.
I don't want to go to Moscow.
You need to go to Moscow.
Before we get to Moscow, I just want to mention...
Changes the subject again.
No, because it's relevant. We're supposed to have dinner last night. We got it all planned. Me, Harry Anton, and
I didn't know Harry
Stephen
confirmed. Nobody ever told
Calabria. But that's not what you said last night. You said it's Hanukkah. You're trying to force Hanukkah on your two kids. You don't get it. Those kids are not Jewish.
They want in,
Dan,
Hanukkah.
I'm going to fucking clobber you, all right?
Yes,
you're going to get a bloody lip.
A good beating.
My kids are Jewish as Moses' half-Jewish kid was.
The children of a rabbi.
Moses had a kid with the shiksa.
There was a video that Noam posted on Facebook where he's like, he's trying to get Manny, his kid Manny, to say Happy Hanukkah, and the kid, simply those words will not cross his lips.
And he ended up saying Feliz Navidad.
He can't do it.
All right. So Todd Barry is here.
A great man, another great man. Todd
Barry. I couldn't
get
those to turn my voice
down.
He's
trying to get him to turn his own voice down. It's very meta, Todd.
Well, let me talk. Go ahead.
Check, check, check. Yeah, I'm fine, but everyone else is loud.
Everyone else loud. Okay.
How is that possible?
Can you guys not scream in the mic, please?
All right.
Well, I don't know if that
I thought there might be a button for that.
Todd, I'll tell you what you missed. Dan said he was prickly and then decided he wouldn't tell us why he was prickly.
Well, no, and then I offered.
Then Dan says something about me, not, and then he changed the subject again.
Dan is not totally happy with Noam's priorities. Priority structure.
I just feel doesn't treat this show as a high priority, which is his right, by the way.
What, the show, the comedy show?
This show that we're doing right now.
Oh, this show. Yeah. Okay.
This show, Todd.
You know, he'd rather light Hanukkah candles with his kids than discuss possible guests, for example.
You imagine. You want to spend time with your kids as opposed to coming here.
Well, let me tell you something. If it was a music gig, he'd drop those half-breeds in a hot minute.
All right.
But when it's the radio show, he's got to stay home and eat potato latkes.
All right. So anyway, is Todd Jewish?
Yeah, I am Jewish.
Do you celebrate Hanukkah?
I can't get enough of this stuff.
I took a free menorah from a dude on the street the other day.
You did?
And I went ahead and, I said, I'll like this. I didn't really, I'm sure I didn't do it complete. I didn't do all the little prayers you're supposed to say, but I, I'm two candles in, so I'm in.
You got to keep going, you're in,
baby. What is it among us? You're not religious,
no,
are you?
I'm not.
Would you say that you don't believe in God?
I wouldn't call myself an atheist, but I guess I'm an agnostic.
Yeah, not the traditional Judeo-Western God, Judeo-Christian God, right? Not the guy looking down at you. No, I'm saying you don't believe in that.
You know how so many people think that they're
I'll
like
answer the rest of the time.
Like left wing like artsy people are more likely to believe in like the Hindu or like the Buddhist notion of God. Do you think like Buddhists and Hindus are like more likely to believe in
the Judeo-Christian?
Not in the Buddhist Hindu sense, but maybe in the Jewish sense.
I'm more a religious. Religious. Is that a word? Irreligious?
Irreligious, I think is it.
Irreligious?
I mean, I don't, you know, it's hard to believe that a guy specifically is watching down, caring about whether or not you do specific shit.
Are we having this conversation?
Really? No, we're not.
I'm an affirmed atheist. I would say I'm as certain that there's no God as I'm certain of almost anything there is. And still, I want to celebrate Hanukkah with my kids. I just can't help it.
Yeah, but it's
What kind of God?
It's a cultural affirmation, and it should be celebrated.
What kind of God would invent a world where men want to blow loads and young women?
And yet these broads, they're not always so receptive.
And they're not interested much of the time. I mean, who created that?
A torturous God.
Created this.
An angry God.
I thought you were going to say war.
And then you get, well, that too. But what do you think causes a lot of war? Maybe not poverty, but...
Inability to blow a load.
Well, you'd think that God would say, look, I'm going to create a system where men and women are naturally monogamous and they create wholesome relationships. And when they get older, they're attracted to each other even more.
Sure. Desires are satiated in such a way you don't walk around anxiety-filled.
I mean, so God really created an interesting, if there is one, a system that I find hard why he would have created it.
Are you an atheist?
I would think, I hate the word atheist. Yeah. There's something about the word atheist.
It's atheist.
It's presumptuous.
It's scary.
And presumptuous.
So I use the word agnostic, which sounds a lot softer and nicer.
But
it also means something.
An atheist would say you're a gutless atheist if you're an agnostic.
Yes, I would say that.
And they may well have a point.
We don't have to get philosophical, but the whole Cartesian split's a big problem. You need to will yourself into believing there's something else there.
Let's pause
understand.
So people can Google Cartesian.
I know.
When religion and science parted ways, if you've got to see it to believe it, then you lose some mystic part of our nature. Dove is right, but
Todd is doing something you might qualify as spiritual. He's doing something that comedians don't do often, which is going on a vacation.
Alone.
Yeah.
Alone.
I thought your career was a vacation. What vacation from what? Where do you guys take vacations
I'm
from?
Going to Japan.
No, it's stressful.
I'm
out
dying
there.
To go to Japan.
Come on out there. I'm going Sunday.
Talk about a good place to blow a load, Dan.
Well, I imagine it would be.
It's a mecca.
You know, Todd, I have a hard time reading Todd as to whether that kind of activity, obviously he's a sexual person. But whether or not he would engage in some sort of money exchange.
No, I don't. I, I would. No, I wouldn't.
He likes a good exchange. Just
I would
monetary.
Just be thinking about all the other dudes that are.
Yeah.
And I'd also feel bad for the hostess.
For the hostess?
Would you feel bad for her because it's like low self-esteem on your part, or you just feel bad for her because of her profession?
I would feel like I was part of the problem
right.
of her life.
Yeah. I feel like you're also part of the problem.
But then you see her sex workers talking about how you shouldn't tell us that we don't like our job and I love my job. And
no, I think most of them don't love their job.
Somebody should do a documentary about like Asian massage parlor women.
Yeah.
Like with blur them out and have somebody interview them. Because nobody, what goes on in their minds? Nobody knows that. Like,
well, I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean, what goes on there?
Like, do they like it? Do they not like it? Do they get turned on?
I think like any prostitute, and I've been with a few, I mean, some are okay with the experience, but they're often so fucked up that what they're okay with is a function of their very fractured psychology or or abuse growing up. It's the manifestation of a kind of trauma, the ability to deal with that and not want to jump in a river.
Now maybe this is totally racist to me, and maybe now when President Trump is it'll be okay to say things like this.
Office,
but
yeah.
For some reason, I think that the Asian massage women are not as damaged psychologically as a Jewish girl.
Perhaps it's a bit more ingrained in their culture, and in the Netherlands, it's a bit it's legal, and you're not as stigmatized, but it's still pretty shitty.
Have you been to Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Don't you feel sad walking through that red light district?
It didn't prevent me from going into one of those rooms, but
did you really?
Yeah. Yeah, what am I, a fag?
Well, most of those women are not Dutch. They come from...
they're trafficked,
all over Eastern Europe.
No, they come from, the Eastern former Soviet bloc. I don't know how many of them are actually Dutch.
So it's a scam.
And I don't... I typically don't go to those prostitutes, not because I feel bad that I'm exploiting them. Oh, that's an interesting point. Mostly because I just don't... It doesn't excite me if they're not excited. I like a woman to be into it.
Yeah, that costs more.
But that, and then I think you'll need a prostitute for that.
I knew there was a joke there.
Yeah.
What else were you planning on doing in Japan?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to eat and walk around. And
Have you had an affinity for Asian culture, or is...
Well,
chose Japan.
The full answer is I wanted to go on vacation.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to get gold status on United.
A lot of ways to do that. You chose Japan. There's 20 different countries you could have gotten
silver,
gold status.
But I was like 8,000 miles away. I go, I want this vacation anyway.
Sure. I've done that.
And then I saw an article in New York Times. It said Tokyo is a great place to travel by yourself.
Ah.
So I said, Tokyo, here it is.
Call one of those noon red-eye flights. I call all flights the red eye. Makes me feel like a real businessman. People love telling me they took the red eye. Oh man, the red eye's great. Get on the plane at 1 a.m. Sit upright for 6 hours. Land in New York at that sweet, sweet time, 4:55 in the morning. At work by 8. Passed out in the conference room by 8:15. Looking for a new job at 8:30. Oh, the red eye. Went to Chicago, yeah. They have really nice Walgreens in Chicago. It's true, they convert an old bank into a Walgreens, it's beautiful. They use the vault as the vitamin section. I walked in there, I was so impressed, I went on Twitter and I wrote, I have to give out my first annual Best Walgreens Award. The winner is Chicago, Milwaukee Avenue location. Some guy writes back immediately, the cops killed a guy there a year ago. Okay. What do you want me to do now? Take the award away? I can't do that. It's the first annual Todd Barry Best Walgreens Award. This is huge. I'm not going to take it back because a guy was shot there a year ago. It's not like it happened while I was in the store. It's not like I was walking around the candy aisle, a guy gets gunned down next to me. I'm like, this is a nice Walgreens. I wonder if you noticed that's the original tile. Good food in Chicago. I'm kind of a picky eater, though, yeah. I have three categories of food. Foods I like. Foods I don't like, but I understand why people like them. Then there are foods that baffle me. Food I like. Let's pick an easy one. Pizza. Yum. Delicious. No need for further discussion. Second category, sushi. Don't like it. Totally get why people like it, though. What a beautiful, beautiful, awful-tasting food that is. I remember the one time I tried it 17 years ago at the Cincinnati airport. I did not enjoy it. No second chances for sushi. You blew it, sushi. Gave you every opportunity to be good with that quarter of a bite that I took and spit out immediately. Third category, foods that baffle me, egg salad. If I'm in a diner and I see someone order egg salad, all I can think is, so you read all 75 pages of that menu? And that's the item that popped? Oh, honey, I found it. Top of page 59. Flip ahead. Cold, smelly eggs. I'm sorry, cold, smelly, disgusting eggs. Got so excited, I read that wrong. Smashed together with cold, awful mayonnaise. Also made with cold, smelly eggs. Served on white bread. Baby, this is why we go to restaurants.
You know, a lot of people think that comedians, when we do our gigs, and like I do gigs sometimes in nice places, and they think that that's a vacation.
It's not.
No, but it's typically not. If you have a show hanging over you the whole day.
Exactly.
It's not a vacation.
It's a cloud over the...
To varying extent. And some people are better at compartmentalizing, and they, okay, the whole day I'm going to not think about the show tonight.
Well, you can do a show sometimes and then take a day off in that city.
Yeah, you can stay there for a couple...
So you're saying people do a Aruba Ray's show and then they work a half an hour a night, they don't feel like that's a vacation?
Well, Aruba Ray's show is a bit different because you're only doing 20 to 30 minutes a night and it's only one show.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not, it's about, for me, now everybody's different. Now for me, it's about 70% a vacation and it's about 30% compromised by the knowledge that I have to do a show that night.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Tony Woods is sweating it.
No, Tony Woods might. Certain people are very relaxed and the whole day and they're in a city and they'll say they're in Washington, D.C.
I don't
doing
have a lot
club.
Of anxiety around the show, but I know that if I'm somewhere in town doing something interesting, I got to get back to the show 2 hours before. One, I want to rest a little, be there for the show. Show's 2 hours long. It eats up 3 hours of your night at a comedy show with a guy with a ponytail. I don't always want to be there.
Have you done shows overseas?
No, I don't. Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I did a Showtime special from Amsterdam. I did one of their red light things. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well,
I did Australia.
For me, it's not. There really is great anxiety. Not so much with Aruba Ray show, but if I'm doing a club, I'm pretty much the whole day I'm paralyzed. But that's why I stopped doing clubs.
And you have anxiety when you're performing at the Comedy Cell.
No, the Comedy Cell is the only place I don't have anxiety.
No anxiety.
Very little.
Very little.
Look forward to the kebab after.
On the anxiety scale, the needle barely moves. There is some anxiety associated with it, but not very much at all, because I feel very at home here.
Todd's relaxed. Are you relaxed, Todd? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Todd is not relaxed. Todd is anxiety-filled. But
well, I was going to say, I don't know if it's interesting, but when you go to another country to do comedy, you're spending half the day trying to second-guess what references they're going to get.
Absolutely. Yeah, are they
going to
laugh at
Whereas if you go to Minneapolis
pool?
Or something, you're not worried about some store you mentioned.
When I'm in Minneapolis, so I do worry somewhat that they might be a little squeamish about certain things.
Prince or something?
No, because
your ethnicity?
They're a conservative people.
Minnesota?
If you go to Minneapolis, you're going to be...
Isn't that like one of the most liberal states in the
Very,
union?
Very,
yeah.
Al Franken is a senator there.
Well, I don't mean in the political sense conservative. I mean these are people that may not want to hear...
In the Jew-hating sense.
No, they may not want to hear stuff that's too dirty.
But you're not a dirty comic.
You're PG-13,
maybe. More or less PG-13. Yeah, yeah. You know what it is? I'm more or less PG-13. But I do have some bits. The real me is more R-rated. I tone it down for business reasons.
Really?
Yeah, because most of the money that I make is
he's not funny when he's dirty.
Is gigs that I have to be reasonably clean.
I think he's funny when
what,
he's
like the
when
temples
he's
and stuff?
Temples and also corporates. You know, I'm doing a lot of corporates these days.
I don't get corporates.
Well, that's how I'm. I weeded out the clubs. I'm starting to do more corporates. And I'm.
What's your corporate rate?
You know, I don't want to disclose it because...
There you go. That was the right answer.
You know, because it's basically, it comes down to how much you got, motherfucker. Yeah. You know, that's pretty much how we do it.
Where are you getting all these corporates from?
Yeah.
They flow through my man, Johnny Lampert. You want to talk about, Dub was in L.A. pitching a pilot. I wanted to get to that.
Okay, you want to talk about the pilot pitching?
I don't want to talk about it. No, I don't, you know, I don't find it that interesting, man. I guess this show centers around the entertainment.
Did you do you pitched it?
I went to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, TBS, HBO, Showtime. Yeah, and we're still waiting on some answers. But the landscape is shifting. I mean, that part of it is interesting. When you walk into Amazon, they're not really developing content as much as they are buying very specific things, airing them for 10 episodes, and then maybe not again. And so the development landscape changes. So I just had lunch with a writer friend of mine who's like, you can't just go and sell a project and then you've got money to live off for a while you try to sell your next one 4 years down the line.
You can't do that?
No, not so much, because if you go to Amazon, they're not developing a lot of scripts. It used to be ABC would make 30 scripts, 20 scripts. They make script deals. You go in, pitch a show, they pay you as a writer, 53, whatever it is, it would get
you
through.
They don't pay you based on downloads or views or anything like that?
Well, you might be able to get, you increase the probability that you get a deal if you got a bunch of views.
I think Amazon, if you make a pilot with them, they post it and then people vote it.
They all have ways of, they all have their own matrix in developing whether or not the show goes, but if you do a pilot with them, you got to first pitch it and get them to pay for the script, unless you want to write it on spec.
Isn't it amazing?
So it's tough for a writer.
Isn't it amazing that just as, like, the really big money, got punctured out of like the music business and the television business? It turns like
it's not amazing. It's just a trajectory.
Wait. That simultaneously with that, it became affordable for almost anybody to produce. Like it used to be. It would take hundreds of thousands of dollars to make a record album. Like,
yes.
And
it's good and bad.
At the same time, so just when you couldn't make money on records anymore, it became so cheap to make records that can't make money on
just
a
when you can't
sitcom
make it
anymore,
at all, everybody can now make it.
You can buy a couple cameras and make
it. Everybody can buy a video camera.
It's just amazing how these things work out.
Yeah. Well, it's also amazing that the distribution network, a place like Amazon, their whole business model is to sell you anything. It used to be just a distribution point. So if you want water, I can sell it to you and ship it to your house. And now the same people are creating content, developing that, and selling you that based on a model that just got you involved because you were buying water, bird seed, and chicken feed.
Dove, you should tell people you're pointing at water every time you say
water. Dove is an interesting cat. For those who don't know him, he's probably the most business-oriented comedian that works here. And I remember when he was had a large role in a film called Invincible about a much-exaggerated movie based on a guy that
Vince
went to...
Vince Papale, yeah.
Based on Vince Papale, who went to the NFL, and I think after one game, you never heard about him again. But the movie made it sound like he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, what Dove was doing was in a big role in a big movie with Mark Wahlberg. And I said, Dove, this is great. Oh, my God, you're in a movie. Yeah. And Dove is like, yeah, you know, you never know. I mean, this movie, and then I may never work again. And he was right. You know, he's right to be cynical. But sometimes I feel like Dove has no, he's not a dreamer. He's not a starry-eyed dreamer like so many of us are.
Well, not starry-eyed, but I try to go after big game in that deal with Zellweger. You know, it's like I'm putting together a movie and I want to own a piece of the stuff. And then I've pitched a bunch of shows and had three pilot deals, two made. But
can I ask you a question about the pilots?
By all means.
Two of them were made for what networks?
Fox and Showtime.
And they were your concepts?
My idea. Neil Brennan was partner on one. We made it. They gave us $750,000 to make the pilot. We made it. We didn't get picked up.
Well, I did just get my check from the Judd Apatow pilot.
Oh, you were in the Judd Apatow?
Yeah, last minute they called me up with what could only be described as a bit part, but I, I'm not complaining. It's just that's what it was. I was complaining earlier. So I'm not complaining
And you
right
won't
now.
Be complaining again about it.
But
when they cut it.
You know, they might well cut it, yeah. So I was playing a comic that does stand up on stage. In other words, it wasn't a particularly challenging role as an actor goes. I just had to do my act, and they're going to cut it down to whatever they cut it down to. They might.
Can you act, Dan?
Well, I'm one of America's finest actors.
Can you could you cry?
Cry on cue? That's something... I don't know if I could cry on cue, but of course,
also,
you know,
that's
a lot of
not
people
an indicator necessarily.
Could
being
you
a
do
great
a
actor.
Sex scene where you had to?
I'm a fine actor. No,
with a hold on, I'll ask you a question.
Yeah,
could you do a sex scene with a camera, like really in your
I
face,
have done it.
And simulate orgasm?
Yeah,
I would imagine so. Yeah, the little acting I've done quite well.
Thank you.
You know, and I think for a comedian, the question is not can you act, but can you act for the roles that you're likely to get. You know, if you write a show for me that's got me in mind, then I'll act the fuck out of it. If you write a show, if you asked me to do Hamlet, then it probably wouldn't be that good.
Do a little Hamlet for us, Dan.
Yeah, no, I'd love to hear a little bit of Hamlet.
I knew him well. I don't know. Give me a soliloquy here from Hamlet.
So Dan has a resonant voice.
Macbeth, you know, out, brief candle. Life is but a walking shadow. I never had to say Shakespeare because I don't know what they're saying anyway. So, but that's a good soliloquy, though. A tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury.
That's pretty good, Dan.
It's good.
Dignifying.
Well, Dan, I have a meeting on Thursday. Nothing. I have a meeting on Thursday with, I guess I can't say, but with some very important people in the movie industry.
Yeah.
Who are very important, like very, very, very important.
Yeah.
And they're doing some movie about stand-up comedy.
Yeah, sure.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know exactly what he's talking about. And
HBO's, go ahead.
No, and the meeting, it's not HBO. And the meeting is Thursday, and what they're asking me and is to kind of discuss comics that would be good for a movie about stand-up comedy.
Oh, thank you in advance.
And I plan to sell my friend Dan Natterman.
Well,
and I'm going to play them your Shakespeare that you just did in the microphone,
that's great.
Dan.
Certainly appreciate it.
Are they really asking for your names of comics first?
I think so. You know, I'm not. They're meeting with us, and I think that's the agenda, like to get some insight into who the comics. They've been coming down and watching comics.
By the way, I did a role as a stand-up comic in a movie called Trainwreck that has nothing to do with Amy Schumer's Trainwreck. That went straight to video and starred Sean William Scott.
And I did a movie with him.
Yeah, so I had the same role. I played a comic on stage. It said, "And now," and then introduced the Sean William Scott character.
Yeah,
that's not really acting, though, right?
If I'm doing my stand-up, it's not acting. It's just doing my stand-up. That movie, by the way, the name changed to American Loser, but it was originally Trainwreck.
It's like my father did a movie when he was young. Do you know my father, Tom?
Manny?
So when I named when I bought the bar and I named it the Fat Black Pussycat, I was Googling everything Fat Black Pussycat, and found out there's a movie called Fat Black Pussycat, and it was kind of supposed to be like a softcore porn movie.
Yeah.
So I bought it, figuring I might be able to get some images from people. So I bought it, I'm watching the opening credits, and it's kind of like typical music or this, and opening credits, Fat Black Pussycat starring blah, 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 and it says, featuring blah, 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 Menachem Dwarman, blah, 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 blah.
No!
And I stopped, it was Steve Fabricant, I said, stop it!
That's crazy.
And Steve, like, no, it's probably another. I think it was Manny Dwarman. Anyways, I said, it's probably another Manny Dwarman. I'm like, there is no other Manny Dwarman. I'm about to see my father in a softcore porn movie.
Oh, my God.
So
that's
crazy. I really didn't want to watch it.
He bangs a black chick.
But anyway, so I said, fuck it. So I watched the movie. And sure enough, there's no real nudity. But anyway, there's a party scene right at the top. And my father is playing the guitar in the party scene.
That's great.
And so what made me think of it is that he's playing guitar, playing a song.
Yeah, not acting.
That's as much acting as being your own, doing your stand-up material is in a movie, right?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't qualify it as acting. Only to the extent that doing stand-up is acting in a certain fashion because...
And when I showed it to him, he had no recollection of having done it.
Yeah.
Do you worry about doing stand-up in a movie? Like, people won't know whether you wrote that or not because they're not going to give you a writing credit?
Oh, that's an interesting... No, I hadn't thought about
that. That's a good point.
You'll be thinking about that now. Yeah. Well, does a Writers Guild give us any protection?
But then what, are you going to rat them out or something?
I'm not going to rat anybody out, but I just wonder what
the Writers Guild has to say
about
it.
It doesn't matter.
When you're done, you rat Judd Apatow out. When you're done with your career, when you've given it all up, then rat him out and sue Apatow.
Well, and all is said and done, But I still have miles to go before I sleep.
I've always feel like it's a bit of a smokescreen.
Well,
like
maybe a mile.
Part of the movie business is contingent upon getting people to believe that something is super special about being a part of it. There are aspects of it that are special, but it's almost like a hustle, you know? It's like people are like, I had a line in the thing. It's like, okay, but you don't want to turn that, you don't want to be fooled into thinking that that's necessarily a career. There are very few people that turn it into.
Well, people react to being on film, like, I've done like two lines on a TV show, and it's fine.
It's a big deal for people.
But it's like, I feel like, well, a set I did downstairs is
so much more
probably more impressive.
It's so much more representative of somebody with real talent and a voice, you know? It's like, so this guy threw you two lines, and everybody's going like that. It's a hustle.
I mean, it's fine, and it's fun to be in these things.
Sure,
but
it is.
But it's not, people are like, oh my goodness.
But when young people with no father get dropped off a bus in Hollywood, and they believe that you see these eyes that are whining, there's a lack of perspective.
As a young, I still get caught up in, you know, I still think it's kind of exciting to be on these sets, you know, when I came down to the Judd Apatow show. You see all the cameras and It's kind of fun.
The food, man.
But I'll tell you what, I'm nice more impressed as I get older. I'm more impressed, less impressed with the creative aspect of it, and more impressed with the technical aspect.
Yeah, yeah,
I see these cameras. Who invented these things? These are marvels
The answer, by the way, is the white
well,
man.
Well, I don't want to get into whether it was... Duff. Come on, Duff. We're going to have to edit that out.
That was
out.
Duff.
I'm not editing it out. I'm not
going to... That's going to be the name of the episode. His own racism?
Hold on. On that note, yeah. So Dante Nero came up to me.
Well, and where is Dante's here, I think?
Dante?
I just saw Dante...
No, he left. The Jeep pulled away a while ago.
Dante is a big, huge... Yeah. Black guy, like I think, does he actually box or something, Todd?
I don't know.
He's
looks
a big guy.
He looks like he could.
I know Dante. Yeah, he's a big guy.
I think he's done security. He's a
formidable physical. Yeah, a big guy.
So he came up to me and he says, "Well, what do you think about this Trump thing?"
Yeah.
And I just assumed, being kind of prejudiced, that the black guy is going to be being liberal, and I'm like, "Well, I'm against it. You can't keep all the Muslims out." And he goes, "But he says why?"
Right.
And I didn't want to say because it's un-American.
It's anti-American.
Because that's not really an answer. You know, that's a conclusion. It's un-American.
But I think it is illegal. I mean, it would be illegal.
Yeah, and it's illegal. But that's also not that's a technicality.
It goes counter to the Constitution. The idea that we will accept your huddled masses. So go ahead.
My answer was the Constitution. It's a Statue of Liberty. It's a poem.
My answer was
America's still an idea.
I had trouble coming up with an answer right away.
Yeah.
But I did eventually come up with an answer.
Yeah.
But I do want to call everybody's attention to the fact that I think that most of the answers we're going to hear why it's wrong, and I think it is wrong, they're not really answers. To say something un-American,
that's
not
fair.
An answer. That's no logic to say it's un-American. To say that it's illegal, well...
is it illegal?
I don't know.
I believe it is.
But to say that it's illegal...
I don't consider Todd an American.
To say that it's illegal is almost implying, well, I would be for it, but, you know, hands are tied.
Exactly.
You know?
What are you going
to
do?
So the question is... And I'll put it
by
to
the
anybody,
way, Noam, excellent point.
I'll put the
Noam says I never give him credit when credit's due.
Yeah.
I give him credit when it's due. It's not due that often.
Let him finish.
I put the question to everybody, in case anyone wants to answer, what is wrong with Trump's proposal to stop... To put a halt on Muslim immigration until such time as we can get terrorism under control.
The same thing that's wrong. Go ahead.
Wait, one at a time. Go ahead.
I have an answer.
Go ahead, Dan.
First, okay.
And I think it's wrong, too.
To the extent that we need immigrants, we have a right to pick and choose which immigrants we let into our home. The problem with Trump's proposal is it creates an environment of hostility to the Muslims that are already here. Moreover, if there's Muslims that are in great need... as a matter of assuming that, like, say you have a world where there's 100 Christians that really, 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 really need to get in and 100 Muslims that really, really need to get into America, and we chose the Christians over the Muslims and their needs were the same, I don't know if that's bad. But if the Muslims have more need and we exclude them, then that would be immoral if we have no real security reason for it. But I think the number one answer is it creates hostility toward the Muslims that are already here, a false hostility toward Muslims, an exaggerated sense of fear, and that will repercussions and consequences for the Muslims that are currently in the country.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason I feel. The you have to weigh the pros and cons, and the idea of essentially overnight making all Muslims who are here, I mean, here we are, safe, I tell you, Dan, basking in the glow of the Star of David with the Arabs in the kitchen.
Yeah,
I mean, what could happen? But to make these people, and many of them are Americans, right? Overnight second-class citizens.
Right.
And essentially putting a stamp of approval on anybody who wants to make assumptions about them based on their ethnicity and their religion can only be justified, if it could ever be justified, by the most hard and fast reason of evidence. You know, I mean, and I just can't imagine us doing that. We already have 10 million Muslims in the country. Yeah. And although I hate to ever use this argument, it will really make us look bad to the world.
Well, not only
which is not a moral argument, but it's something to be considered.
It may incentivize other Muslims that are otherwise not radical. It could radicalize a lot of the population that's already here in some way. I mean, it's
skeptical.
It's just
if anything could radicalize him, it's that. I agree.
But
and what's to be gained? I can't believe
that's
fucking
like diminishing personal freedom in order to achieve some larger objective.
There was a guy on the news today who was pointing out there's like how many people in the higher up levels of anti-terrorism are Muslim. I mean,
wow,
I mean, they what are you going to say to them?
Yeah, no, I mean, it eats away at the fabric of what
wrong.
We understand.
It is. It what is
we
just understand.
Wrong. Can we just say it's wrong?
Yeah. But, you know, for instance,
that's
can I make a point? We interned the Japanese in
yeah,
Second
World
War.
II, yeah.
And it's considered to be a national shame.
Blight. It's a blight on America.
But usually the reason they say it's a blight is because we didn't need to be scared of the Japanese. It turns out we were overreacting. But nobody ever quite takes the additional step of saying it doesn't matter if we had reason to be scared of the Japanese. It was just wrong. I think most people would agree if we really did have reason.
Right, right.
Or let's put it another way. Let's say the Japanese did invade the West Coast,
right.
And then the Japanese Americans became a fifth column and joined it.
Right.
We'd look back at it and say, what the hell was the matter with us that
right.
we didn't turn? So,
right.
you know, it's all easy to say in retrospect. But having said that, I just can't believe he says something so ugly. Even Dick Cheney was like, what the hell is the matter with this guy?
It's all...
Paul Ryan called him out today.
Yeah, but Cheney is really like somebody said on Facebook, when Emperor Palpatine is offended.
Emperor Palpatine.
I do, once again, Noam, I do think that was a very, very, some very
astute.
Good points
astute,
that you just
yeah.
made that I haven't heard.
I'll make another point.
I haven't heard being made thus far.
I'll make another point.
On the social media or elsewhere.
But don't you feel like it's connected to the idea of, you know, whether it's tapping cell phones or all of the other individual freedoms that supposedly manifest itself in an American way of life, or for that matter, a Western European way of life. It erodes at this sort of fabric of what we understand as a kind of personal freedom.
It does, but
yeah.
so does terrorism. I mean, this is Obama says it's not a threat to our way of life. It's not an existential threat to America,
sure.
But is an existential threat to our way of life. And I believe that this jihadist ideology is as a poisonous weed. If you use the analogy of a poisonous weed, the seed is now spread through the air of the internet.
It sometimes feels a bit like a red herring.
Spread through the internet to the extent that somebody needs no interface with the with the home
sure,
office.
You got all these cells.
Somebody's alone in their bedroom. They go on a bulletin board, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They become radicalized.
Yeah.
They do the bidding of ISIS, whoever it is.
Yeah.
And how are we going to control this? And the lesson of this last
cells.
Thing in San Bernardino is that it doesn't need to be on a holiday. It doesn't need to be the World Trade Center. Any target anywhere in America gets them just as much attention.
That's right.
And just so I am convinced it's going to be happening a lot.
Well, perhaps, but you know what's happening a lot definitively now that we know is happening a lot is that there are 10,000 homicides in parts. I mean, what are the homicide statistics all over Chicago? I mean, relative to the population, there are far more murders going on here on home soil by non-Muslims than there are by any radicalized Muslims by
a
thousandfold.
I hate that argument.
I'm not saying it's an argument.
I could call it almost anti-intellectual.
Ooh.
All right.
Ooh. No, I'm not. It's not my argument. Yeah. I'm just saying ironic.
It's
that
Chuck
everybody
Martin
seems
to
coalesce when it becomes to.
I want to make one more point to you guys, then we'll get off the thing.
Yeah.
I think President Obama. I don't know. Todd, you're probably a liberal, right? I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. But you tell me what you think.
The man lives in the East Village, for God's sake,
and won't leave. For Christ's sake.
Way to reveal where I live.
I don't like to be an armchair psychologist. Dove loves to be an armchair psychologist.
Yeah, you can sit down. By the way, we're doing a radio.
So I like armchairs and I like psychology.
But you don't have to.
But I believe he might be in some sort of. I hate to say this, but I can't. Some sort of denial, in the sense that. This whole gun control thing in reaction to the terrorism thing, I'm for gun control, seems to me to be what does gun control have to do with terrorism? Almost as if he can't bring himself to face that these decisions he made over the last 6 years, pulling out of Iraq, pulling out of this, taking his eye off ISIS, deciding that they're not a threat to really be worried about, JV squad, all that. All of a sudden now, there's a huge problem. And if he has to admit that there's a huge problem, he's also having to admit, I screwed this up.
There's a huge problem with what?
With terrorism, that ISIS is now a huge problem.
Sure, yeah.
That the entire Middle East is now becoming, once again, a safe haven for terrorism. Against all his advice. But the argument I want to make, and I haven't heard this argument either.
Yeah.
You tell me. What group is going to be less likely to be thwarted by gun control laws
than
terrorists?
Of course.
Maybe
yeah.
the mafia. Obviously, terrorists are
going to
get guns. Maybe I put it like a guy is going to hold up a gas station.
You want to give your own life. You're not stopping anybody.
A guy is going to hold up a gas station. You know, he might not go into the shop and get a gun. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
a terrorist organization, they're going to have guns. They're going to make their own bombs. It is. So what is going on in the mind of the very bright president of the United States, and certainly he's bright, that when ISIS seems to have infected another person and shot up San Francisco, he wants to bring up gun control as if there's some law that could be passed in America
that
could have prevented this.
But I don't think it's about that.
That's exactly what it's about.
But he wants to make progress as it relates to gun control. And if that's a way to do that, I don't think he gives a fuck whether or not it's substantiated by the actuality of a terrorist pulling out a gun because
it's
legal.
Do you really believe what you're saying? He has a lot of causes he could... He's going to piggyback a cause.
Right, no, but I think that in this particular case, gun control... Look, it's always a dubious proposition whether gun control would or would not have prevented such and such a mass shooting. In this case, I think maybe I don't see this guy in San Bernardino as necessarily I don't know. Maybe he could have been prevented by gun control.
First of all, they had two assault rifles that somebody else gave him. He had pipe bombs. They had guns. They had 3,000 rounds of ammunition. Somebody deposited $27,000 in his bank account a few days before the thing.
But you don't.
Or maybe not. I don't think
that politicians grab at anything to substantiate their policy desires?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I'm just saying it.
It's not a great argument. No,
there is something that bothers me when it's
disingenuous.
All of a sudden, I'm here. I was joking about the olive tree, the star of day. Yeah, I say all of a sudden, I'm saying, shit, this could be happening in New York City many, many times a year. Let's watch the president and see what he's got to say to make me feel better.
Yeah.
I want to get some gun control, which is never going to happen. Is going to take years.
Not going to solve the problem.
See, I mean, it's like, this is not, it's, am I wrong to say President Obama? Really? So I'm more scared now than I was before.
Even gun control is not going to work. I mean, the only thing that works is like it is in Japan where nobody has a gun. That's the only thing that works.
In Japan, well, I went through this on the internet. Do you know that in America, you can't find a Japanese American who murders anybody with a gun.
I know. A lot of the ethnic correlates are that our murder rate isn't that much higher if you just look at the
Japanese Americans don't murder in Japan where they have no guns, and they don't murder here where they have any gun they want. It's nothing to do with gun control.
Well, it does a bit, because black people that have high homicide rates aren't necessarily killing each other in Western European nations with gun control, with heavy gun control.
The Japanese argument has nothing to do with gun control. The reason they don't have a lot of gun murders in Japan, the same reason they don't have a lot of robberies with knives in Japan.
They don't have any knife control.
Well, that's a magnificent... If this were a Seinfeld episode, you know... It all comes back, and we'd see Todd Barry in Japan being held up by a Japanese guy.
And stabbed
Larry David would have.
Stabbed one day, shot the next day.
Todd obviously doesn't like to talk politics.
Well, it's not his purview. It's not mine either. I try to keep up, but, you know.
What does Todd... I've only grown to
homosexuality and independent movies.
To love Todd Barry because...
Todd Barry's a great comedian.
He texted Sarah Silverman for me when I thought I pissed her off about politics.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to do that. And he made me feel much, much better. She wasn't mad at me.
Todd's a good man. Todd's all heart.
But he's a hard man to get to know because he's quiet.
Todd's not an easy man to get to know. He's reserved.
You guys are also loud, though.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I don't mean that as an insult.
No, he's right. What do you like to
talk about? Still waters run deep.
What do you like to talk about?
I like to talk about food. Brooklyn, we could talk more about my apartment search. And
what is it about food? Is food one of your... Are you like a foodie?
I'm not a foodie, but I'm a picky foodie. Eating out's like my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Got to read those Yelp restaurant reviews, though, right? Sometimes, though, I get too caught up in the drama. Some heavy stories on Yelp. I'll be at my computer like, oh, man, this poor woman. She went to this restaurant for a birthday party. That's always the red flag in any Yelp restaurant review. If you see the words birthday party, it's going to be a good one. She went to this restaurant for a birthday party. They had a 7 o'clock reservation. All right. They didn't get seated till 7:15. No wonder she ran home and ripped this place a new asshole. In a scathing 13,000-word review. That reveals 12,000 words in that the food was actually really great. I don't eat right. Some people eat worse than I do, though. Saw a guy eating lunch. He had a burger, fries, milkshake, beer. Yeah. Burger and fries look delicious. Milkshake beer looked a little weird, even if you didn't care about your health. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have a burger, fries, milkshake, and a beer. Yeah, both those. No, not one or the other, both of them. Trust me, it's gonna be fine. I was like, milkshake, strawberry, my favorite. Suddenly the worst beer I've ever had in my life. I don't eat right, I'm a germaphobe also, yeah. Never drop my phone in the toilet, that's a good thing. Someone tells me they dropped their phone in the toilet, their next sentence has to be, so of course I left it in the toilet. Because it wouldn't even occur to me to reach into a toilet to avoid buying a new phone. And don't tell me how you put in a bowl of dry rice either. But I put in a bowl of dry rice, all the way a surgeon preps his scalpels. I asked this woman if she ever dropped her phone in the toilet. She goes, I did, but there was no pee in there. Really? Never? That is the luckiest series of events ever. They're installing a new toilet. You're first in line. The mayor cuts the ribbon. The glare from his scissors blinds you. You slip, you fall. Where's that phone end up? Ah, the crystal clear waters of an innocent virgin toilet.
You don't cook for yourself?
Never, no.
You eat out every night?
Pretty much, yeah. Occasionally, you know, yeah. I'll grab something or order in. But.
Do you eat out by yourself a lot? Do you eat out?
Yeah,
by
I do.
That's interesting.
Oh, I love to do that. That's like a real New York thing, I think.
I think it's a New York thing. I think it's a very adult thing to do.
It's a very adult thing.
And
it's
what with the advent of the smartphone, you're never without reading material. You know,
do you eat
to be
out alone?
I can't.
Or go on Facebook and keep in contact with my good friends or some old friends that I haven't seen in some time. So it's always...
You could have bought a book, but yeah, sure.
All Dan does is Tinder.
I know. I know.
I know I don't Tinder anymore because I had no luck on it. I'm too old for Tinder.
You're never too old.
Tinder's a young man's game.
Is it an old Tinder? Like an old...
Well, you could...
Yeah, it's called antiquated.net. Yeah.
You know, well, the problem is this. On Tinder, I have to reveal my age, whereas in real life, I don't have to bring it up until we're banging. And then it's too late.
First of all, girls don't care how old you are. Yeah. You know
they certainly
you're in
do.
Showbiz, different set of rules.
Nah, just, well, yes and no, right? I mean, you find plenty that don't.
I think there are plenty that do.
Right, but that's no reason not to do it.
And I think on Tinder, when they have to give you an age range, like if they met me, they may not care. Right. But if on Tinder they have to put in their parameters, I'm looking for age 30 to 35, whatever. When you have to put that parameters in, very few women are going to put
that automatically take you out of their feed? Or
I'm out of my... They don't even see me, you know, if they don't want any 46-year-old. Right. My feeling is that...
A lot of people lie.
My feeling is that 50...
What's your age range?
My age range is 25 to 35.
25, nice. Yeah.
25, 35, but we're hoping for not 35.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but...
I like a good 35.
30, but that's why it's in my age range.
I'll tear right in.
Are you allowed to choose ethnicity?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can't choose it as a parameter, but when you see a woman that doesn't fit the ethnicity that you like...
You can on OkCupid. You can choose it as a search parameter.
Todd, have you ever been married?
No, I haven't.
And you have a girlfriend?
I had one up till like 6 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, a lovely girl, yeah. I mean, that's a... You can say
you think I'm going to get mad at you for saying she was lovely? Wife.
And do you internet date or anything?
No, I think I feel like
you're too
I'm
famous for that.
I hate to say that, but I think I am too famous.
Yeah, you are too famous for that.
Well,
I would be afraid that I'd get punked.
There is no too famous for it. You can use it as leverage to get more contact.
You did that, but I don't...
No. I just experimented with one thing one time, and then some people had seen me actually messaged me, and that's how I got a couple of dates. But, you know, whatever.
No, I think first
What's
of all...
What's the downside of it if he does it?
Well, I feel like I'd worry I'd get punked, like I'd get set up by
You
someone.
Get punked one time out of 1,000? You'd also get a lot of interest.
And you'd get gossiped about it.
No, when you meet somebody...
What's wrong with that?
I'm private.
Yeah. Okay.
When you meet somebody... You talk to them. You see if it's for real. Maybe you talk to them on the phone.
Yeah, precisely.
I don't think there's real danger of getting punked.
There's no danger.
You can get punked in real life.
I'm with Todd.
Punked with anything.
I don't think Todd
You say it's bad for his reputation.
No, Todd may not want, but if the objective is to get laid and meet people, then you're casting a wider net, whether or not you're with them.
I will say, when I first moved here, I actually did, I haven't talked about this a lot, but personal ads.
Scoop.
Like when they were in the...
Yeah,
like
that's interesting.
You did that?
New York Press. Yeah, I did that. I mean, this is pre-internet. Just
Lonely
looking
Beach
for a
Village.
Woman. Who,
yeah,
whatever.
Looking well, for a groovy.
Did anybody answer?
Yeah, I met a lot. There were women who you wouldn't think would need to read
Use
the that. New York Press.
Yeah, that presumption is no longer true.
So how did you would give a phone number? How did you communicate in
those
days?
They had like a box, and then they would forward you the letter.
Ah. And
wow, this is so old.
No, but this video, this is very interesting. And they would send
like a
picture. Yeah, like a
handwritten letter. Yeah, yeah, picture, handwritten wow. letter.
Well, that actually is good in a way because it kind of weeds, like you have someone who can write a letter.
Weeds lazy
you,
people.
Yeah, lazy people. Like you're less likely to get like somebody frivolous.
But I mean, this was also before anyone even knew about the internet.
Ted Kaczynski can write good letters too.
And was it nerve-wracking to meet somebody?
Well, I think, I mean... Yeah, I mean, there's the whole thing of, like, getting rejected. You could get rejected 3 times a week, or maybe you could reject someone 3 times a week. Yeah, I think the sudden inundation, if that's the right word, of options can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like
I would
meeting 5
be
people
too
a week for coffee or something. And
oh,
then,
yeah, I found it, yeah. I mean, it's taxing. I mean, it all depends how much work you want to put in. It becomes like any other search, you know? What do you want to do? What are you willing to do to find the thing? The more you go out with, the higher the probability you meet somebody that's right. But it's painful.
Dove is currently involved with a young lady. And,
yeah, no, I live with a bro.
And they're in couples therapy.
What a waste of time. No, it's not.
Oh, Dove.
What do you know?
I've been to couples therapy.
How many times?
We used to go.
Being opinionated on politics. You don't know anything about it.
We used to go every week.
You're out of your depth.
And the last session ended with the therapist.
I know.
Giving
you had
me
one bad experience with a therapist.
What
which
did he
means
do?
Therapist, it was a female therapist.
Which gives you the right to vilify the whole
letter. Can you let the last therapist ended with somebody, with the last session ended with the therapist giving me a foot massage and saying, oh, you're very, very stressed.
Yeah.
And
really?
My wife burst into tears and ran out of the room.
That seems massively unprofessional.
But if you said it is unprofessional. It's not representative of the average psychologist.
Can I get that name of the therapist?
Yes, you can.
No, but if I went to see one comedy show and saw a shitty show and I see all comedians suck.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an unusual, weird experience.
No. The reason I'm not saying therapy can ever work. The reason couples therapy would not work for me and my wife is because if it requires you to be honest.
Yeah.
And... I think that the repercussions of the honesty would far outweigh, like it would take years for either of us to get over hearing what we suspect each of us is. Like you just can't, we're not like that.
Do you have separate private moments with the therapist or is it always you and your girlfriend sitting
well,
there?
Well, it can be, but the problem is that a couple's therapist is good for engendering communication when it's difficult between you and so-and-so to get somebody, a referee from the outside to see things. Ultimately, you're going to have to go back into your own kind of analysis and work on your own reactive shit because it's not going to be solved in couples therapy.
Yeah, I was talking to someone.
Couples therapy is a good coaching scenario.
Yeah, I was talking to someone who went to it and they said their therapist basically said, I'm not here to get you guys back together.
Right. They're there to help.
What is he there for?
Communication. I'll explain it.
So if you can figure out whether you should be together. I'm guessing that's what it is, right?
If I go to a couples therapist, for instance, my girl has emotional issues, and then he helps me. He goes, oh, when she doesn't pay attention to you or isn't aware of your presence, you feel obliterated. You feel like, you know, I didn't realize how angry I felt when she didn't come in and acknowledge me. And so I would react. But I'm not reacting to the problem I'm having there. I'm reacting to a mother that was on a commune and a father that was gone and growing up in an environment where if I didn't immediately assert myself, nobody would listen to me. My mother's a therapist. Is anybody here in therapy? Are you in therapy? Do you ever feel like these people connect things you had no idea could be connected in your life? Like I said, Mom, I go, Mom, could you pass me the salt? And she goes, salt, pot, it's all the same to you. And then she goes, what happens when the pot runs out? And I was like, well, first of all, the pot's not going to run out. You know, and second of all, do you think the pot could really run out? Why would you say shit like that to me? Now, I don't get high anymore. Wow, but I don't get high anymore because I had a bad experience. Nah, you know you're too high when you're eating cereal naked and your girlfriend is like, put some clothes on, and you realize it's not your girlfriend, it's just a woman on a bus. I was...
My father used to get high in the bathroom when I was a kid, and there'd be smoke pouring out under the door. And I didn't know what was going on. I was 12 years old. I'd knock on the door. I'd say, "Dad, are you okay?" And he was so high, he'd respond with stuff that had nothing to do with the question. He was like, "I'm in the garage," you know? I'm 12, I'm not retarded. There's smoke coming out under the door. And then he would deny it was him, like, "I didn't know." Literally, he goes, "This is not your father."
And so I learned to dial down my shit.
Wait, you're dialed down?
No, of course, I know.
No, yeah, you dial no. down more than?
I am, actually. I used to be a little jumpy.
Well, I think it wouldn't work for me.
It may not, but most people benefit.
I don't know.
I want Keith Robinson to go to therapy.
A lot of people do. God. You're not the only one. A lot of the Robinsons.
I brought it up with him, and he was like, "Just no way." But I think he would be. I think he would love. I'd be curious to see if he liked it.
I seem to find all therapy. Obviously, giving me the foot massage was unethical, right?
Yeah, that's weird.
So then a lot of the therapy. I didn't want to say the guy's name, but a lot of the comedians all go see the same therapist. Yeah. You know, the guy they all go see.
Yeah, I don't go see him. But.
So Robert Kelly recommended that I go see him. He didn't bother me. You should go see him. I said, maybe I will, Robert. I don't know. Yeah. But I didn't. All of a sudden, I get a phone call from this therapist.
He's telemarketing?
Yeah. He says, "This is so-and-so.
That's weird.
Robert Kelly told me that you might like to come and see me."
Oh, that's weird.
That's weird, too, right? You're not supposed to call up.
That's like cold calling
that's
somewhere?
That's telemarketing.
He's drumming up
you're
business.
You're getting involved like, with some wacky people.
And this is what he takes me for. Like, he's just calling me because he's concerned about me. Robert Kelly told him about some person who exists that might need help. Yeah. And out of the goodness of his heart, he's calling me to make...
Oh,
no, he's trying to make money.
Yeah, that seems massively unprofessional.
I don't, you know...
Isn't that unbelievable? Yeah. And this guy, everybody says is so fantastic. Already,
not everybody, just the comedian.
Everybody who sees
him. I just think it's weird that...
Dan and Gary had a really bad fight about this.
I just think it's weird that all these people
Well, no, Gary said I should see him, and I said I'm not going to go see a therapist that every comedian goes to see. Yeah. I just think that's weird.
I agree with Dan on this.
I agree with Dan, too.
I hate to agree with Dan on anything, but I...
Yeah, you find yourself with the back against the wall on this one.
Yeah, but you've got shitty examples of anybody. My guy is the head of the postdoc program at NYU. He's a guy from Greece originally. He's the real deal.
So I could Google it. I could figure out who your therapist is.
I'd give you his name, but he's the real deal, and he's a guy that when you sit down with him, there's gravity in the room. There's nothing wacky. There's no foot massage. You know the difference. I know the difference when I'm talking to somebody who's fucking smart and spent a lot of time in their body and in themselves. And there's a difference.
He told you the first day you go in there for the consultation, no foot massage.
No foot massage. That was in the contract.
No full service.
No full service.
No foot massage.
Yeah, that seems almost desperate calling you up. And saying
that is odd.
It really turned me off.
I'll
fucking call you, brother.
It's a little,
fishy.
I don't know, not self-aware. Yeah. Like
I wouldn't see somebody who called me up.
To the extent that I was even considering calling him, it was extinguished the second he called me and tried to get me to come see him. It was weird.
But we're examining an extreme aberration. I mean, I could talk about a doctor that I saw. He's had two aberrations.
I have a third one to tell you about. Every time I see a therapist, my stepmother was seeing a therapist. Yeah. And his stepmother asked to see my father, which I think is common. My father went to the therapist, and the therapist asked my father, "Listen, whatever happens here is between you and me. I will not tell Carol.
Yeah.
But you need to tell me, are you having an affair?"
Right.
And my father said, "Yes, I am." Yeah. And the therapist went and told my stepmother and blew the whole marriage up.
That's the craziest thing I've ever
heard. Yeah, I don't think they're supposed to do that either.
No,
it would ruin their practice if people did that. But, I don't know. That's unfortunate.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up. Dove apparently has the one good therapist.
Did you ever have your therapist call me?
Dove just asked me if I've ever had a therapist. I think the proof is in the pudding.
Lee's saying, look at him. How could he have had a good therapist?
How do you know he wouldn't have jumped out a fucking window 10 years ago?
Fair enough.
And why don't we, on that note,
all right. I want to thank Todd Barry.
Thank you, Todd.
Todd Barry is, we have to have him on again at some point because I think that he doesn't like to fight for airtime and he got a little squashed here, but I find him very interesting.
Todd's a very interesting guy.
Yeah, and Jim Norton, yeah.
No, I just wanted to say I'm enjoying this sign-off. It's like, you know, we were really happy Todd was here. We're sorry you didn't contribute anything. We'd love to have you back.
Oh,
I know.
No, that's not what I meant. It's like I'm thinking, in the bubble over Todd's head, being like, this motherfucker invited me on the show and I can't get a word in edgewise. That's what I'm worried about.
That's all right, though. I bring a different energy to the room.
See, Todd also has his own podcast. You're still doing it.
Oh, come on, plug it.
Todd Barry Podcast.
Todd Barry Podcast.
I've done it. You should, too.
I've done it. It was a fine podcast.
What kind of guests do you have on that podcast?
Mainly comedians, sometimes musicians, but mainly comedians.
Have you got any cool musicians?
No one you've heard of. They're all indie rockers.
Oh,
indie rockers. Has Louis done your podcast?
No, I'd feel weird having Louis on.
You'd feel weird asking him.
I've just known him so long that it would seem, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people I'm more intimidated about asking than others.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I had Sarah on. Yeah. But I had her on a live one, so it was a little, bounced it off the audience.
And she's somehow more approachable, right? There's something very...
Yeah, I mean, Louis, you know, one of my best friends, but
I still don't put you two together as best friends, but obviously you are. It just seems odd to me.
I got to take a leak in the worst way. God bless everybody.
Go ahead, Doug. If you're a mensch, kind of, if you're a person who's socially... apt, asking your best friend is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Because you know that it's going to be hard for him to say no, and you don't want to put him in that position.
Well, I actually did talk to him about it, but he's like, well, we'd have to figure out a way to do it. Because I'm not going to interview him. It's just too weird. I don't know. For me, it would be weird with him.
Yeah, I mean, Louis gets asked. I don't ever ask, not that Louis and I are friends or anything, but I don't ever ask him for anything. Because I know everybody asks him for it.
Right,
and
right.
If I asked him, I know he'd feel pressured to say yes, and I don't even want him.
I have a lot of people now who use me as their...
their conduit.
Exactly, yeah. They'll be like, hey, Todd, no, I can't get that to Louis. I kind of know ahead. I can feel what they're about to ask.
Yeah, I get that all the time. From time to time, if I think it's something that seems like, yeah, Louis might want to see this, I'll send it to, like, Jeff Caron or something and say, forward this to Louis if you think he should get it. But other than that, no. It happened to me just today. I pulled one in here. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Todd Barry. Thank you, Dove. Dan Nannerman. Bye.
All right.